It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York City, with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning October 13th, 2023. There's no question about what has dominated headlines this week: war. It's being reported as already on its way to becoming that all-too-familiar phenomenon, a long war. That's not surprising, since on the very first day, Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu predicted himself that it would be a difficult and long war. The underlying enmity between Israel and the Palestinians has already resulted in at least eight previous wars during the Jewish state's 75 years of existence. And until now, they've mostly been short and sharp, and successful for the Israelis. There have been exceptions, of course. The more recent wars against Hamas, interestingly, in 2008 and 2014, lasting just a matter of weeks and ending inconclusively. The historic wars that Israel decisively won famously included the Six-Day War of 1967 and the Yom Kippur War of 1973, 50 years almost to the day before this current outbreak. That war, like this one, began unexpectedly for Israel. An attack on that major religious holiday this year started just one day after that same holiday, but on the Sabbath still. The 73 war has long been labeled by Israeli military historians as the failure, a failure by their armed forces and intelligence agencies. They were at first taken completely unawares when Egyptian and Syrian troops launched their joint offensive. Something of a media legend was created when the Israelis, already seen as the Middle East's strongest army, quickly reversed matters and beat the invaders back, even driving deep into Egyptian territory on the other side of the Suez Canal. This past week, it was probably Britain's Telegraph newspaper that was the first to report that a, quote, stunned Israel suffered, I quote again, a 9/11 moment. And Israeli officials themselves started early on to use that same easy or knee-jerk journalistic trope. The spokesperson for the IDF, Israel Defense Force, Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus, by now a globally recognized figure thanks to his many press appearances, told the French news agency Agence France-Presse that it was, quote, by far the worst day in Israeli history. And he probably had American audiences most in mind when he described it as, quote, a 9/11 and a Pearl Harbor wrapped up into one. Now, spy agencies and international news reporters are far from the same thing, but they do have to tread the same pathways much of the time, cover similar ground. An essential difference, of course, is that intelligence operatives have to gain their knowledge and interpret their findings in real time. Journalists are not under the same life and death time constraint. In the matter of Israel being taken so badly by surprise this time in 2023, today's global journalists are inevitably doing much second guessing of Israel's military, foreign, and domestic intelligence services. And they're doing it with the benefit of hindsight, of course, our trade's perpetual luxury. I should point out that among the agencies being second-guessed, it's the domestic service, Shin Bet, that has had responsibility, maybe surprisingly, and certainly in this case tellingly, for watching over both the Israeli-occupied West Bank and the blockaded enclave of Gaza, where Hamas has been in charge for the past 17 years. It was only last week, according to Israel's own probing journalists at Haaretz newspaper, that Shin Bet had concluded that Hamas was eager, quote, to avoid a full-fledged war with Israel. In other words, Hamas had them duped, putting out persuasively non-aggressive signals, indeed war-weary signals, while at the same time According to what Reuters News Service has discovered in its thorough digging, Hamas was rigorously drilling and training their foot soldiers for the coming invasion. A massive and gruesome atrocity-laden operation, as it turned out, by air, ground, and sea. And shockingly, targeting civilians, including children and the elderly, killing them and dragging off many as hostages. Inside the Gaza enclave, which I know to be so small and crowded that you'd think nothing unusual could take place without it being known to Israel's spies, Hamas was even able, says Reuters, to construct a fake Israeli village on which they could practice their smash-and-seize tactics. We can only conclude that even Israeli security analysts, who are supposedly among the best in the world, did not interpret all this rehearsing as a serious threat to Israeli communities near the Gaza boundary. And indeed, some attacks even reached villages 20 miles inside Israel. I strongly commend to you the Reuters coverage as a whole, both its blow-by-blow accounts of the ongoing hostilities, especially now the tightened throttling and heavy bombardment of the Gaza enclave, as well as Reuters' revelations about the dubious intel assessments that lie behind how it all began. Those intelligence failures are really hard to credit, especially if we believe the mythology encouraged in many Western media about Israel's intelligence invincibility. That sort of mythologizing has led to a kind of blindness, I suspect, in both journalists and intelligence officers. Earlier this year, when I was still broadcasting with my late and much-missed partner, Marshall Miles, we were at pains to highlight some poor and even cursory coverage of Israeli raids into both the Palestinians' Jenin refugee camp and the occupied West Bank town of Nablus. Those raids caused deaths that were counted by the score, a small toll perhaps compared with the hundreds already killed in this week's fighting, getting into the thousands we must now fear. But for the Palestinians, Jenin and Nablus were seen as catastrophic, the most deadly incursion by Israel in 20 years, they were saying at the time. And we cited this as evidence of some dangerous cranking up in Arab-Israeli tensions that was not earning as much attention as it should. A blowback was inevitable, but it still was not foreseen. For political observers, it's been instructive to see how the Biden White House responded to the Hamas attacks. Briefings for the press from the National Security Team and the State Department instantly insisted that the administration's hopes for a deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia would stay on track and mustn't be seen as endangered by the dramatic outbreak of war. That seems a forlorn hope now, as warfare continues and almost inevitably could expand further. The Washington Post used a headline that was blunt, maybe cruelly sarcastic. Biden hoped for a quiet Middle East. So much for that. Some unkindness like that could be warranted, I guess. Biden's cherished high-level deal between the Saudis and Israel, along with other elements of the Mideast scene, was being lauded at an event less than 2 weeks ago, hosted by The Atlantic magazine. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told assembled journalists and others that, quote, the Middle East region is quieter today than it has been in two decades. One inescapable truth about the Saudi-Israeli deal, despite it containing some rhetorical nodding toward the Palestinian issue, is that the Palestinians themselves just did not feature in it. As the war has deepened, partisan protests on both sides have filled the streets of our country's cities and many others. I couldn't take sides in these protests. But you don't have to be partisan, or to be swallowing anyone's media propaganda, to recognize amid the continuing deluge of horrifying war news that leaving the Palestinians out of any plans for the region is asking for trouble. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.